This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here's your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
Good Tuesday morning, everybody. I am Glenda Geek in Ocala, Florida.
And I am Christy Landwehr in Aurora, Colorado. And you are listening to Horses in the Morning on Horse Radio Network for this Tuesday, February 18th, 2020, episode 2373. This episode is brought to you by the Certified Horsemanship Association. Good morning, horse world.
Houston, we have a problem.
Ability equals skill plus knowledge.
I got a bad feeling about this.
Here's a safety tip for you from the Certified Horsemanship Association.
Missed it by that much.
How can I change this to make it better the next time?
Help you, I can. Yeah.
Time for Training Tuesday on Horses in the Morning with the Certified Horsemanship Association.
Well, howdy, everybody, and welcome back to Tuesday. Christy is here the third Tuesday of every month for the last 10 years. And welcome back, Christy. Hey, I am here. I did not get picked to be on a jury. So I am here. I didn't have to take the whole week off. Jennifer's very happy about that.
I bet.
I never even got called out of the jury room. It was actually a long, boring day because they kind of, I think they block signals for internet in the courthouse too. So
Oh, gosh. You
got a book and that's it. So yeah, I sat there all day. I was only one of about 10 that never got called up to be picked for juries. And I heard a couple of them were like 2 week long trials. So ooh. I was kind of glad I didn't get picked for that.
Yeah, that would be a long time. 1 or 2 days would be kind of fun, but yeah. 2 weeks is, whoa.
I was actually kind of hoping for a short one, but nope, never called my name. I don't know. Maybe I look shifty. I don't know why I didn't get picked, but there certainly is. There are about 200 people in the room, and they all come in on Mondays to pick for the trials that week. And it's certainly, they do a great job of getting a variety of types of people.
Ooh, so it was fun people watching.
From young to old to every color in the rainbow to just everything. I mean, it was certainly a microcosm of the United States in that one room.
Right. That's kind of nice, though. It's fun at least to, you know, see all that. It's like going to the airport or the bus station or something like that.
Yeah, no, it was good. And, you know, so you could tell some people wanted to be picked and some were just really mad they had to be there. So it's just like America in every other way, too. So what do we got coming up on today's show?
We have so many fun things, but it's all through just one person, but she's going to be really good. Her name is Kara Musgrave, and she is one of our certified instructors, and she does a whole lot with positive reinforcement training, which is exciting. I know a lot of people are interested in that. So since this is Training Tuesday, we thought we would have her on, and Shauna Karish actually was on our show in the past, and she's also been a keynoter for us at the Certified Horsemanship.
Right here in the network.
That she does. So it's fun to see that she's now doing that with you all too. So it's really fun. So we're excited that, you know, she's spreading the love to other people and one of our instructors has embraced it. So we're going to chat a little bit about that today.
Equine Clicker 101 is what that one's called. So you've been, this is your travel season, I know, because I don't hear from you much. And where have you been?
Yes, it is my travel season. You know, every probably winter, springish, and then every fallish, summer is nothing, which is kind of nice because all of you people are too busy working with your horses to want to have conferences. And I just am the conference girl. So I just came back from Seattle, Washington. We had United States Pony Club was there and that was really fun. But guess what it did every single day, Glenn?
What's that?
It rained.
Of course it did.
Every single day.
Of course it did.
And it was beautiful. Don't get me wrong. Those that live in Washington, it was beautiful. Everything was green. I'm very jealous because Denver, everything's brown. But oh my goodness, it was a lot of water coming down. Yes.
Could you see the mountains at all?
You know, on the very last day, as I'm flying away, I got to see Mount Rainier out of my airplane window, and I took a photo. It was the most beautiful thing I think I've ever seen, with it coming up out of the clouds like that. Oh my gosh, like majestic doesn't even describe it. It was awe-inspiring. Like I told everyone in my seats next to me, because I always get a window, look out the window, look out the window. They're probably like, oh my gosh, crazy lady, have you ever been in a plane before?
And you're tall like me. You have trouble fitting in those seats too.
Oh, but it was fun. Oh, it's a really, really good conference. Everybody did a really bang up job of putting it together. And of course, they bring in that anatomy room where they have the fetuses of the horses, and they have all the intestines in a big thing that you can check out. And oh my gosh, it's just cool.
And so what's going on with Pony Club? It's something we don't talk about Pony Club a lot here, actually. Jennifer, what is, you know, an A Pony Clubber? But...
Well, you know, we have a partnership with them, and our partnership is as follows. They, of course, certify the rider, technically, right? Because they have their D, C, B, and A levels. And if you're an A Pony Clubber, you're a big deal. You're like going to the Olympics. I mean, big deal. So it means a lot on a resume, whereas we certify the instructor. So we do a lot of kind of that back and forth with one another on, you know, sharing resources for knowledge and materials to just basically educate, because of course, most of their D through A'ers have to be in the arena, being a mentor to others and learning how to teach themselves. So then once they graduate from Pony Club, they can come and get certified by us as an instructor. So it's been a nice partnership.
And you speak at all these conferences. What'd you speak about there?
I do. This one I did How to Buy a Horse. And I did marketing to the different generations of people, and I did careers in the horse industry.
Oh, wow. You spoke a lot.
I did. It was good.
What kind of questions do you get when you talk about the careers one?
You know, I like doing the careers one at this one because there was so many ages in there. We probably had 12-year-olds in there, you know, all the way up to the parents and the grandparents that wanted to hear the information. So I get a lot of, you know, do we have to do internships? Is that important? Which, of course, the answer is yes, yes, and more yes. Whether you want to do boots on the ground or be on the admin side like you and I, Glenn, boy, you've got to do internships. You have to learn the ropes before you can just jump in. People don't just want school when they're hiring you. They also want that experience. So that's always a big question. And, you know, how to find them and what's a good idea. And then, of course, they ask me about college and whether that's important. And the answer is it depends, right, on what they want to do. I mean, trade school is going to serve you well if you want to be a farrier. And so there's a lot of different types of schooling questions that come up. And, you know, how much schooling do I need for certain things? Because obviously, if you want to be a professor, you got to get your PhD. So there's a wide variety of, you know, questions like that that come up.
I bet. And everybody, I think kids think it's going to be easy. I'll just go be a working student, not realizing what that entails, you know? So I think a lot of them are really surprised how much work that is when they get there.
I would agree. And I think they come to the careers talk and the parents and them are all thinking veterinarian, farrier, trainer, and that's it.
Yeah.
And they don't realize, I mean, podcasting's on my PowerPoint, Glenn.
Is? Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Because you can make a career doing what you're doing, obviously. So there's a lot of different avenues that people I don't think realize are available to them. And so it's a fun talk to do.
And guess what? They're all work.
They are.
I mean, even your job. I mean, you have a good job, but you travel a lot. I mean, any job, there's pluses and minuses. There just is. It's just the way
If like the podcast is great, but after I get off of it today, Glenn, I got to go into QuickBooks. That's not great.
Yeah, no, and I give Jennifer that, and that's why she's grumpy all the time. but you know, even in this, the best part of my job is talking on the mic, right? That's the best part. It's being here on the show. It's the part I enjoy the most. But 80% of my week is spent doing business stuff.
Yes.
You know, and if I could avoid the business stuff and just talk on a mic, it'd be the perfect job. But you know, every job has its thing. Now, you also went to the ACA. What's the ACA?
Yeah. So that's the American Camp Association Convention.
Oh, yeah.
And 40% of our members are still very much
every day there in like big pots.
You know, they always have fun. I'm just going to tell you right now, the camping people have fun. You walk onto the property and you're instantly surrounded by, you know, kids that are just in adult bodies.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they deal with camp all the time. They have to have to be fun, right?
They do. And they don't want to leave camp. That's why they're still 40 and 50 and in camping.
Camp. You didn't have to be that mentality to work with those kids at camp.
Oh my gosh, they're just great. And the energy is so high. Like, they had these singers that were coming outside, and they did karaoke, and they're doing karaoke at 10 a.m. I mean, they just don't care. I mean, they're just out on the lawn having a good time, having their barbecues. Just, it's great.
So what did you speak about there?
There, I only did one talk, and it was basically Camp Horse programming. And it was everything from how to start one, to how to keep it going, to how to find staff for it, how to find good horses for it, how to find funding for it, how to be creative in your programming, ways to teach group riding that's safe, different kind of trail things that you can do, because, of course, a lot of them have a trail that they'd go out on. So a lot of those types of things. And it was great, because when I first get into a room, I ask, unless it's a huge group, like 200 people or something. But if it's under, 50, 60 people, which this one was, I can ask them all to take the mic and go around the room and say who they are. And then they can network with one another afterwards. And then I get an idea of what all they need to hear. And then I ask them what they need to hear, put it up on a whiteboard, and just make sure that I cover it, just in case there's not a slide on it in the PowerPoint. It'll still give me an opportunity to cover it. Because we had executive directors in there that had no clue what a horse was, except that they were pretty. And then we had people in there that were the programmers. And then we had people in there that were the boots on the ground. I feed the horses every day and teach the riding. So wide variety.
Are more and more camps getting rid of the horses, or are there more and more that are looking to add horses?
I would say there's a decrease just because of cost. Yeah. And so instead of having them year round, they're going to leasing, or they're going to, getting them from a seasonal operation that can rent them out to them. But then there's some that are like, there was a YMCA down there that works with Armed Services that came up to me afterwards and said, we were just given 32 acres that already has barns and everything on it, and we want to start a horse program. Okay. So it definitely goes both ways.
There you go. Another job opportunity, right?
Yes.
Another type of job available right there. And before we get to our first guest, you have a couple of, you told me before the show that you had listeners coming up to you too.
That was really fun. Yes, at Pony Club I did. I had a couple come up to me, and I don't know, my voice is a little bit low today because I think I've been talking too much, but they come up to me, they go, we recognize the voice, and then we see the CHA behind you at your booth, and then we know you're Christy. And I'm like, that's cool.
That's kind of fun. But you have a couple of shows coming up where people can say hi to you.
Yes, please. So in Tennessee this weekend, I'll be at the Southern Horse Expo. I've never done this show before. And it's in Murfreesboro, which is right outside of Nashville at the Miller Coliseum at Middle Tennessee State University. So that'll be fun. I'm actually doing four talks there, and two of them are in the arena with riders and horses. So I'm excited about that one. And then the next one isn't all the way until April. That actually has a CHA booth and has me speaking. And that one is, of course, Good Old Equine Affair in Columbus, Ohio, which we go to every year.
Yep. Very cool. Sounds good. Well, we have our first guest coming up, our only guest coming up today, because, well, we actually do have two guests today. We have Kara coming up. And then after Kara, we're going to do a host highlight, which I can't believe we have never done with you. And that's where I get to grill you about your past. And we get to get the nitty gritty out about your past and all the naughty things you've done over the years.
So, and what's fun about this is that you didn't give me a list of questions at all. So it's going to be very spontaneous and on the fly.
Give you a list of questions. And I love the fact that you think I have a list of questions. I like that about you. So we've done these with most of the hosts over the last 2 years, I would say. And they've been very popular. I did one with Joseph on the Horse Husband episode, who hosts that. And it's probably one of the most commented on episodes I've ever done. So we'll see what we can get out of you today.
Oh, boy.
That's coming up after we talk to Kara.
We are so excited to have Kara Musgrave on. She is a horse trainer and riding instructor from Lexington, Kentucky, who focuses on restoring healthy movement while building a more connected relationship between her horses and riders. She is certified level 3 with us, and uses positive reinforcement to help horses feel agile, brave, and confident in all that we ask them to do for us. She is also our current Kentucky State Representative. Hello, Kara. How are you today?
Hi, I'm doing great.
So tell us, where exactly in the Lexington area do you live? Are you by the horse park?
I'm not. I actually live pretty close to downtown, and I keep my horses just about 10 miles outside of town. So Lexington's great for that. You can be in a city but still have access to horses and all that the countryside has to offer.
You can definitely do both. And tell us a little bit about your background in the industry, because you've done quite a bit.
Oh gosh, I've done everything. I have worked at multiple summer camps. One was a Western rodeo type camp, a lot of English camps. I managed the equestrian program at the Life Adventure Center for about 8 years. And there we did mostly English riding, some vaulting. And now I'm just kind of off on my own doing the positive reinforcement thing.
And do you currently have a bunch of horses that you use for like people that want to come and learn, or do you primarily just have your own private horse and then others bring horses to you? How does all that work?
I just have my own horses that I work with. And then I travel and teach people on their own horses, or I can also do video coaching online, which through the power of the internet, which is kind of cool.
That is cool. And I think more and more people are starting to do that. And that's a whole new, we were just talking about careers prior to you coming on. See, Glenn, a whole new career. There's so many. Yes, there's so many.
True.
So tell us a little bit, Kara, about positive reinforcement and how it differs from traditional training. What does it all look like? And know that Shauna Karish also has a show that's on the Horse Radio Network, which is great.
Yes.
So a lot of your listeners today are going to know, but there's going to be some that don't.
Yeah, I love her podcast. I actually direct a lot of my students to listen to hers.
Yay! I love you then.
Yay! You. Yeah. So the biggest difference between positive reinforcement and more traditional training, which we actually call negative reinforcement, is the horse's motivation. So in positive reinforcement, the horse is motivated to do what we're asking to get a reward, whereas with negative reinforcement, they are working to get that relief of pressure. And the important thing to know is that the positive and negative doesn't refer to bad or good. I think that's a huge misconception. It actually just refers to the subtraction or the addition of something that reinforces the behavior. So like if you had a really stubborn horse that didn't want to walk forward with more traditional training, or negative reinforcement, you would apply pressure to a halter and lead rope. And then once they step forward, you would release that pressure. So you've subtracted the pressure. And with positive reinforcement, you're going to ask them to walk forward with a cue that you have conditioned previously. And then when they do step forward, you're going to add a reward. So that's where the positive and negative comes from.
That makes complete sense. So I know that a lot of positive reinforcement trainers use a clicker. And why is that?
Yeah. So a clicker is a really neat tool. We call it a bridge signal. And a bridge signal is typically a noise that your horse learns to associate with a reward. So in your first positive reinforcement training session, you'll make the noise with the clicker and give them food and repeat that process several times, about 10 to 30 repetitions. And then your horse comes to understand that when they hear that noise, it means that food is coming, you got a reward. And why that's important is it buys us time between them doing the thing we're asking and us rewarding it. So like if I was, let's say, doing canter transitions on a lunge line, and I asked my horse to depart into the canter, it would be really hard and probably dangerous to try and like shove food in its mouth at the moment of that canter transition. But the clicker allows me to mark the exact moment that he departs into the canter, which buys me a little time to give him the reward when he comes back down to a standstill. But it also allows me to get really precise and mark the exact moment that they do what I want. So it kind of acts like a translator. And that noise, the horse comes to understand that it just means like, yes, that's what I wanted. You're going to get a reward soon.
Now, Carol, what do you do about the people that don't think we should feed our horses treats by hand? How do you get around that and keep them from nipping and all those kinds of things that can sometimes come with feeding treats by hand?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And that's a huge myth about positive reinforcement. And I think probably the number one reason that people don't want to try it, because I mean, food can really create treat monsters. The thing about positive reinforcement is when you're doing it, you're going to introduce food under really specific criteria. And in the same way that I'm going to use it to teach my horse to do voice commands like walk on and whoa, I'm going to teach them how to appropriately have good food manners and wait for food and not be nippy. They also understand that I'm not just handing out food right and left. They're not eating it from my pockets. They're only getting food from my hand after they have done what I've asked and they've heard that bridge signal. So it actually can create better food manners than you would associate with like a treat fed, like a spoiled pony who gets treat fed all the time for no reason. So yeah, that's a huge thing that keeps a lot of people from wanting to try.
Well, and that makes good sense on the whole horse behavior perspective, because when we just randomly give our horse treats, we've now made ourselves not above them. We've now made them able to take the food from us whenever they want. So they're in charge of us, right? And that whole concept of we need to be slightly above them, you still are with this concept because they're only getting the treat after they do something that's correct. So that makes good sense.
Yeah, exactly. And if you have a horse that already has a history of being really grabby with food, you can do different things. Like instead of handing them a treat with your hand, you can actually work a little further away from them and have like a feed pan and just toss food into it. And then they know that the food doesn't come from you. It comes in the pan only after they do the thing you're asking. And then you can kind of phase that out and work on it down the road. So there's a lot of different strategies to work through any issues like that, that might be safety concerns.
And what are your most favorite treats to give?
So I prefer to use hay pellets. I use Timothy and alfalfa and I kind of mix them up. And I'll sometimes throw a few like sweet feed pellets in there too. I've got some really big chunky ones that are good. But it's a nice low value food. So, you know, when I'm working, they're able to focus on what they're doing and they're not just focused on the food. I also have easy keepers. So it's really important to give them something that you can give a lot of and not worry about their nutrition. So that's why I really like the hay. And it's pretty inexpensive. So that's good too.
Yeah, that all makes good sense. So why would I want to use positive reinforcement versus traditional? What would be some of the main reasons why that would even be a good thing for me to change? And if I've had a horse that's been doing it the traditional way for years, is that a challenge to switch them over?
It can be a challenge if you go completely cold turkey. But a lot of people, when they start with positive reinforcement, they just kind of start to do one specific thing, like teach them a trick. And negative reinforcement is obviously super successful for most horses and in most riding situations. That's why that's what the majority of people do. But sometimes we can get just a little stuck, either because there's a poor movement pattern or an injury, a neurological disorder, or a training issue involving really deep-seated fear. And those things sometimes, they just won't resolve by adding more pressure. So with those, positive reinforcement can be incredibly effective. It utilizes our horse's parasympathetic system, which is associated with things like resting, digesting, play, and positive social interactions. And that opens our horses up to learning on the neural level, which means that they can create new neural pathways or brain pathways, like changing a really deep-seated fear association with a trailer to a positive association, or even relearning how to recruit muscles that have been compensated for due to an injury. It's really fun. It creates a really strong bond between you and your horse, and it makes learning like an adventure.
So how did you get started doing it? What occurred and with which horse when you decided, I'm going to try this?
So I found my way to positive reinforcement through my heart horse, Ben. He got EPM several years ago, which is a terrible disease. It affects them neurologically. It kind of disrupts their central nervous system and their ability for their brain to communicate with their muscles. So working with my husband, who's a physical therapist in the neurological rehab field, we actually came up with a bunch of exercises to help rehab him. And the exercises were great, but when I tried forcing him into them and adding pressure, it just made him shut down because his body didn't feel stable or safe enough to engage. So that's when I discovered positive reinforcement, and I was able to reward him for following me through these different exercises and obstacles. And instead of him focusing on moving away from pressure, he could really focus on just navigating these movement puzzles that I'd set up for him. And because of that, he began to regain his balance and body awareness. And it turned his rehabilitation from this like really painful struggle into these games with prizes. And I mean, from there, I just became really addicted to how happily and easily my horses learn new skills. And I haven't turned back since.
So how much longer do you think you gave Ben by doing these things?
You know, with a thing like EPM, it's so hard to tell. He got really bad, and then he got a lot better, and then he got bad again. So it's just one of those really nasty diseases that, you know, it's hard to tell. But I do know that when we were able to do the exercises with him, he got better. He went from, you know, standing with a really dramatic lean to one direction and kind of almost spinning in circles to being able to go back out with the herd for about, I would say, probably 2 years. He was able to, you know, he wasn't rideable, but he was pasture sound and he was happy and he was able to, you know, get from the field to the water and back. So that was enough for me.
That's really good that was you were able to do that with him. Now, we're riding instructors, you and I, and a lot of our folks listening to our Certified Horsemanship show today are as well. One of the biggest things I think we deal with when we're teaching riders is timing, because we've learned timing over the years, and timing is not something that's easy. And I'm assuming with positive reinforcement, you also have to have timing of when exactly you click the clicker and give the treat and do all that. So how do you go about teaching your owners of their own horses to do this successfully?
Yeah, it's definitely something you have to practice. I always like to start with practicing on a behavior that isn't going to be something that's dangerous or is going to create a lot of problems if your timing is a little off. A really great one is honestly just having them back up. And, you know, what you can do is you stand in front of your horse and you say back up, and you can point to their chest. And you're just kind of watching and waiting for a little weight shift back. And that's when you're going to mark with the clicker and then reinforce with a treat. And that's when, if you get it a little off, you're not going to create, unintentional consequence. There are other things like different tricks. A lot of people love to teach their horse to smile. And so just watching for, I teach my students to watch for something that looks close or an almost, or I'm about to do the thing that you want them to do. I like to video myself, and then I can watch what my horse is doing and hear my clicks. And that helps me really know if I'm being like a little lazy or being, you know, clicking a little behind, or even anticipating and clicking early. But it's just one of those things you just have to kind of do with repetition, and you just kind of work on. But even if you click at a bad time, one bad click isn't going to ruin your horse. You can override that with doing more better timed clicks down the road.
Horses are very forgiving. I think with no matter what kind of training you do, they're very forgiving. Once you start doing it correctly, they tend to go, oh, good, you finally got it. Why is it taking you so long?
Yep.
And then they're still willing to move forward. You know, they're really good about that. So you mentioned backing, which I think is a great one to start with. You mentioned, you know, when you get a little bit more advanced, doing a canter depart on the lunge line. What are some other kind of traditional things that aren't necessarily tricks, but more traditional methods of training that help with using the positive reinforcement? What are some of the things you've done in that area?
Yeah, so I have a young horse. He's 3, and I am bringing him up. I got him as a yearling. I'm bringing him up completely with positive reinforcement. I haven't sat on him yet, but we're working on that. And I have a whole list of things that I want him to know before I sit on his back. And one of those things is walk on and whoa. And so I'm able to do that from the ground. And so what I do, I put he wears a bridle, and I just stand next to him holding the reins like I would if I was mounted. And in positive reinforcement, we use a tool called a target, and that can be anything that you've taught your horse to touch with any body part, but typically it is something that you hold out in front of them and ask them to touch with their nose. And when you use that, you can use it to teach them to walk forward and use it to lead them all kinds of places. So using that target, I will put it in front of him a few feet, and it's on a long stick, like a, almost like a lunge whip. And I'll ask him to walk on with my voice, and then he already knows to walk forward and follow the target. And then I can mark and reinforce when he steps forward. And that's just the very beginning of that behavior. Eventually, I won't need that target anymore. He'll just understand that when I say walk on, it means walk forward. And I can build up the duration from one step to let's walk a lap of the arena. You can also use that target along with your rein cues to teach him steering right and left, which is something I've done. He's from the ground able to move his hindquarters both towards and away from me, as well as his shoulders, and he can back up, and all the things that you would typically teach a horse when you first got started riding.
That is a great idea to teach a young horse. And you know what else came to mind? I thought, wow, you're out on the trail. You have a horse that doesn't want to go through water. You could bring your target out there and you could work on that.
Yeah, absolutely. I have even ridden with a target, a really long one, and held it out in front of the horse. It's a little clumsy, but you can do it. The other really cool thing about positive reinforcement when it comes to a young horse or a green horse is the clicker is kind of like an emergency brake, because when they hear that noise, they almost always stop for food. And so it's, you know, almost an added whoa in there. So that's something else that I like to point out. You know, if you decide to ride using positive reinforcement, you want to be ready for them to stop to get their treat. And most of them, you can teach them to not just slam on the brakes, because that's a little uncomfortable for everyone. But it's, you know, it's a nice way to reinforce that whoa.
That's a really good idea, because it'd be nice to have something other than the pulley rein in your hip pocket for when things go awry.
Absolutely.
Uh-huh. Absolutely. I really like that idea. So, Kara, how can people find you and learn more about what you're doing?
So I'm really active on both Facebook and Instagram. Both of them are at Musgrave Equestrian. And I'm kind of chronicling my journey with Finnick, who's my three-year-old. I'm going to start sitting on him this spring, so that'll be pretty exciting. Hopefully not too exciting to watch. And so, yeah, you can find me there. I'm also available via email, and that is also musgraveequestrian@gmail.com.
And then, of course, you're on our website, too, for those that need want to go there on chainstructors.com. You can also find Kara there. So is there any other project or anything else that you would like to end with today to share a little bit more about positive reinforcement?
Yeah. So one of the things that I am working on, and it should be published this spring, is I'm honoring the legacy of Ben, the horse that I lost this last year, by creating an online course for horse owners to help them rehabilitate their horses who are either dealing with some kind of neurological disorder or a poor movement pattern like one-sidedness, muscle compensations due to long-term injury or stall rest, or even just horses who are just a little clumsy. It's like a horse core stability and agility boot camp.
Ooh, I like that. And you and I need to talk, because that could be good CEU credits for our instructors that need their 25 hours every 3 years. So we'll need to talk more about
that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Well, very good. It sounds like you have a variety of things going on, Kara. We so appreciate you being on the show today and sharing some with us.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Thanks a bunch, Kara.
Thank you.
Well, I want to remind everybody, too, Equine Clicker 101 that Shauna Koresh does is available. I highly recommend you go back and start at episode one, because she kind of walks you through it step by step. And it's more of a learning course than a podcast. And, I mean, it's free, so you can go there. And one of the things that's unique about that podcast is the first portion, 10, 15 minutes, is her talking about it. And then she actually has you go out to your horse while listening to the show and walks you through step by step what to do. And you do it while you're listening. Her and Jennifer do a lot of work to put that together. And it's a really cool show, and it's much different than anything else we do here. So you can find
it's so
it.
Interactive. I like that
a
lot.
Yeah, no, and they pause. In other words, do this with your horse, and then there's a pause with some music, and then you do it with your horse, and then they come back. So you know, it's very well done.
That's awesome. Well, and she's going to be one of our keynoters at our international conference, which is at Texas A&M University in College Station this fall. It's going to be October 30th through November 1st, so Halloween weekend, and she'll be one of our keynoters. And again, anybody listening, it's not just open to CHA members. Come one, come all. We get on horses and ride, so that'll be fun for you that want to see her in person. She'll be with us.
Yay. And she was one of the pioneers in the flipper side of things in when SeaWorld. When they were doing positive reinforcement there. Anytime I go to an aquarium, I think it's Rona, actually, and see the little shows that they do with the sea lions and stuff, because that's all positive reinforcement. That's what that is. And she was the one that said, hey, let's bring that to horses and see what happens. I'm sure, you know, she probably wasn't the first, but she was the one that really made it mainstream. And
very
brought the
true.
Clickers into play. Speaking of coming to horses, let's just mention to everybody where they can find the CHA and everything and the whole schedule and all of that.
Absolutely. So if you go to CHA.horse, that's the easiest website to find us. And then we do have all the podcasts on our website. And of course, they're all on Horses in the Morning too. And then if you go to CHAinstructors.com, you can find an instructor near you. And also a barn that has been accredited by us to board your horse or take lessons, etc.
Very good. Well, now let's talk about you a little bit. Kind of our host highlight here. And I did not warn Christy of what questions, because I kind of just have them in my head and don't write them down anyway. And I actually don't like when guests ask me what questions we're going to ask, because I don't want them to be prepared with written answers. And I know you wouldn't do that, but that's one of the reasons, just a little insider thing,
sure,
why we don't do it here at the Horse Radio Network, and why when I teach podcasting, I don't recommend people do it. You can have questions written down. Christy does a good job of that. You have questions written down kind of as so you can remember what you do want to eventually ask, but you're also very good at listening to what they say and following that thread. So let's start with your heart horse.
Aw, yeah. So it was Ben for Karen. It was Popcorn for me.
Popcorn.
Yes.
Popcorn was a pony, I hope.
Popcorn was a POA. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he was 14-2, and so a big POA. And he was strawberry roan, so looked like a little Appaloosa. Yes. Got him when I was 12 years old for my 12th birthday. Had him until I was 28 and married my husband. So I transitioned from my heart horse to my husband.
To your heart man.
Yes, because he literally, it was almost like he knew, Glenn. It's almost like he knew, all right, there's somebody
here
to take care. Yeah, so I can die now. And because he lived until his mid-30s. I mean, those POAs could live a long time. So he was up there.
Uh-huh. We had a couple of ponies making them their 40s.
Crazy. Yes,
they
I know.
Live a long time. So what'd you do with this POA, Popcorn?
Yeah, so Popcorn was when I grew up in Southern California, and we had a public arena right by my house. And so first of all, I had to ride my bike every day, twice a day, to feed him, because it was a self-care place.
Snow uphill.
Uh-huh. So that was good. Now, I don't know if I would want to do that in Denver, because the weather's a little bit more interesting here. But in SoCal, it was pretty easy to do. And it gave me that responsibility and that having to be somewhere twice a day, no matter what, I can't goof around. And it gave me that kind of all the way through high school. And then when I was 16 years old, I had been going to local shows on him, and I had been taking lessons and doing other things. And all of a sudden I had somebody say, well, will you teach my daughter on Popcorn? And I was 16, and I go, well, I guess I could. So I hung a shingle and called myself a riding instructor, and Popcorn taught. Oh my gosh. Popcorn taught so many people to ride. I mean, he has like a Facebook following. Like I put him up on Facebook one time on my personal page, and he had like 250 likes. I'm like, wow, that's more than I've ever gotten on anything. And he has taught some amazing young people who have gone on to win AQHA world titles and have gone on to be amazing horse trainers themselves in different states around the country. And he was their very first horse. And they'll put pictures of him every now and then on Facebook and say, look, me on Popcorn. So kind of cool.
Well, what a lot of our listeners may not know about you is you're very well respected industry-wide, not just because of the CHA, but because of other work you've done too, and that you do, without getting into details, you do help the industry out in ways that are really, you know, not public. But you're very well respected. How are you as a teenager in high school? Were you the same way? You're kind of serious, or were you the crazy kid?
So I had two hats. So my day hat was at school. Oh, I was a straight A student, Glenn. I never got a B. I was absolutely straight A.
I just guessed that.
Oh, yeah. Very anal, very straight A student. Very, I'm going to get this done. Very, I'm going to be the top of my class. I wasn't valedictorian high, but I was pretty high. Same thing in college, straight A's. Same thing with my master's degree, straight A's. However, after 5 o'clock at night, it changes a bit. And I had this little job called Medieval Times that we've talked about a lot on the show. Yeah. Where I was stable wench and got to groom all the horses
How
and do all of that.
You when you were there, by the way,
16.
Oh my God!
You oh yeah, the minute
with
I
those
drove.
Lecherous actors when you were 16.
Oh, the minute I drove, the first thing I did was go down there, knock on the back door, and some knight opened the door. His name was Jeff, and I go, "Hi, I want to be one of your worker people here." And he's like, "What?" I go, "Yeah, I want to do that." He goes, "Well, HR is open during the day." I go, "Well, here's my resume." And he's like, "Whatever, HR is open during the day." And he took my resume and that was it. Well, it was right before Christmas. And so Christmas Day, I'm 16 and my mother's British and we're having the Christmas pudding after everything is done and the fruitcake and the phone rings. And it's this Jeff guy. He happened to be the lead knight that did all the hiring of stable wenches. He just didn't want to deal with me that night. And he says, "Can you come in right now for an interview?" And I go, "Right now?" He goes, "We're Medieval Times. We're open 24/7, 365. Okay. So I hung up the phone. I looked at my mom and dad and I said, "I'm out." So I went and interviewed and got the job. Yeah.
So were there some wild times that after?
We had some good times at Medieval Times. Yes, we did.
It is still actors and performers. I mean.
Yeah. It is. But what was fun, I had my girlfriend who's my heart girlfriend. You have your heart horse and you have your heart girlfriend. She was my matron of honor in my wedding, all kinds of stuff. Her name is Heather. She just recently came out here and visited. And she and I, we had a great time. But all of the knights were so much older than us because she was, I think, 18 when I was 16, a couple years older than me.
Well,
and they were all
clarify,
in their 20s.
They don't tend to hire not good looking knights.
Oh, my gosh. And the long hair. I mean, they all look like Aquaman.
Exactly.
I mean, they just, or Thor, right? I mean, they just look good. So needless to say, yeah, there was all that going on, but the knights had made a pact and they said, "Oh no, we are never going to date the stable wenches.
Really?
We're going to be, no, we're going to be big brothers to the stable wenches." So my senior year in high school, because I was a nerd and no, everyone thought I was a geek because I got straight A's. I was not asked to my senior prom. So the boys found out, the knights found out. And so one day, one of them gets down on his knees in front of me. His name was Dwight. And he says, "My lady, will you please go to your senior prom with me? And I promise I'll be a brother to you." And I went, "Are you serious?" He goes, "Oh, yes." I go, "Did you draw the short straw?" And he just starts laughing. And he took me to my senior prom. And he was hot. Hot.
Did it shock everybody?
Oh, yeah. Everyone's like, "What is that geeky, nerdy girl doing with that guy?" And then, you know, it was great.
Too. That's the other thing about you. You're my height. I mean,
yes,
I look eye to eye with Christy.
And this knight was, oh, I don't know, probably 6'2", 6'3", and long blonde hair and blue eyes. You know, oh, yeah. About 28, 29. Oh, yeah. It was great.
And what'd your parents think about all of this?
Well, he came over. He was so chivalrous. He came over ahead of time, like weeks ahead of time, and met them and said, "I found out that your daughter wasn't going to senior prom, and I'm very sad about that. So I promise, sir, because my father is 6'5 and about 310 pounds.
Oh, my gosh.
So he was bigger than the knight, and said, "I promise, sir," as he's looking up to my father, "that I will bring her home safe." And I talked to Dwight later. He goes, "Yeah, your dad kind of crushed my hand a little bit." I go, "You think?" Yeah. Yeah. So there was no messing around. He hung by his rules. He decided to play fair and he was fine. And it was also nice. He just gave me a kiss on the cheek when he dropped me off at the door. So sweet.
Boy, that whole situation could have gone a whole different direction.
Yes.
The whole situation working there could have gone a whole different way. Those were good guys to do that.
Oh, so wonderful. And then the stallions, oh my gosh, these Andalusians and Lusitanos. And I got to learn how to work with stallions. And, you know, they were very well-behaved stallions, but all of that. And then all the quarter horses that we used that were the actual runners and the night horses, that was all an adventure. there was a lot to it. You know, animal control
officers. Quick care of horses too.
Oh, yeah. People go, oh my gosh, I need a half an hour to groom my horse and saddle it up. Are you kidding me? You got 2 minutes. The show must go on.
So tell everybody about the transitions, because I think a lot of our audience has been to Medieval Times at one of them around the country. And there's a lot happening. There's a lot of horses in the ring at the same time. Then they all fly out and the next batch are flying in, and there's not a lot of time to change costumes. And what's backstage look like between those changes?
A little bit of mayhem. Yeah. But the horses know like where to go, because we put them on the same spot on the wall, so they know where to stand. And there is, quote unquote, there's food there in a little tub, so they know where to go. And so we, as the stable wenches, have to make sure we have their little bit of grain in each tub. So they run into their spot and they start eating with their bridle on, no big deal. So we run up to them, and as they're eating with their bridle on, because again, we don't care, we got to get the show on the road, we're taking off the comparison. Let's say they were the blue knight horse and now they have to be the black knight horse, so we got to take that comparison off, put the new comparison on. Then we just have tons of rags in our pocket. We take the rag out, we get all the saliva and garbage off of their mouth, and back out they go. And it's just quick.
And they have a lot of white horses in that show too, not just the night part, but the the demonstration parts. So the other thing, we were backstage there. We got a tour and we did a show there, ringside, one day. We did Horses in the Morning there, actually. And in the one in Orlando, everything is staged so perfectly. I mean, the costumes are all lined up and ready in the spots, because you really have to turn them around.
It's fast.
Yeah.
It's very fast. And so, you know, we kind of learned how to pick feet like you do at the racetrack. We picked all 4 feet from the left-hand side, because even pre-show you had to hurry. So we picked all 4 feet from the left-hand side, so you didn't have to go around the horse. We wouldn't really worry about brushing anywhere but where the saddle goes and the girth goes on the horses that had a comparison on them, because who cares if they have a green slime on their butt? No one's going to see them. Now, all the gray horses you talked about that are all beautiful white and all this, oh, there was a lot of that lovely, purple soap you had to use. I mean, all kinds of stuff to get them looking good. Definitely.
And a comparison is their outfit, that the horse's outfit?
Yes, it's the one that goes over their head and all the way through their body, so you can't see anything but their eyes and their tail. Yeah.
Okay. So did the knights practice a lot? And one of the things we were told is they actually prefer to hire non-riders. You know, riding wasn't a necessity, because then they can train you the way they want to train you.
That is very true. Most of them came in not having a clue about what a horse was, but they had a lot of, acting background and also kind of martial arts stuff, because they wanted them to know how to do the fight scenes without getting hurt. Because, those swords, they wanted them to spark. So they were real swords. They weren't sharp, but they wanted them to spark. So they were heavy metal swords that they're still using. That is true, that they didn't have a lot of horse experience coming in, but they definitely knew how to act and fight.
You probably learned a lot working there as a 16-year-old.
Yeah, I was 16 to 20, so I did it my junior year, senior year, and the first couple of years of college.
That's very cool. There's another job that you don't think about when you think about getting into the horse world, right?
Well, it was super fun.
Did you get any fight training? Did they take you side?
No, I didn't do that. I got to ride in the Tournament of Roses parade, side saddle on a Prancing Andalusian. So that was fun.
There you go. Well, that's pretty cool for a teenager.
Yeah, as their countess. So that was cool. And then I got to ride in the show occasionally, not as a knight, but like if one of their guards at the castle didn't show up, there was a quadrille that they did, or they did it 6-man or 8-man. And I learned that routine so that I could hop on and do something like that. But one day I would have to wear whosoever outfit didn't show up. So one day the 6'6", 280-pound guy didn't show up. Well, I'm a tall girl, but I'm not that big. So his helmet didn't fit me. His clothes didn't fit me. I mean, it was bad. So I go out there and my helmet's about to fall off. And I'm cantering alongside my boss, Jeff, who I mentioned, who hired me. And he's like, Christy, you're about to lose your helmet. Do something about that. And I go, it's going to fall off. So sure enough, I tossed my head to try to get it to be center again. And it fell off and it hit the horse on the bum and the horse kicks out and I still stay in the middle. And then my hair, for those that have not met me, it comes down to the middle of my back and it's ginormous. I have a lot of hair wasn't any different back then. So the hair was everywhere. And oh my gosh, the MC didn't even miss a beat. The MC of the night says, my lords and ladies, there appears that a woman have snuck into the guard of the castle. Maybe she's good for something backstage. And the whole audience laughs and I'm totally humiliated and embarrassed. And I go back and I put my little flag down and I go back there and I'm dismounting off the horse. And Jeff comes up to me and he goes, never in the history of the guards of the castle has anyone had to lose their helmet, and it had to be a woman. I said, sorry, Jeff, don't know what to tell you.
funny.
It was pretty good.
Where'd you go from there? What were some of the other interesting things you've done career-wise in the horses?
Yeah, you know, I've never really not had a job that hasn't been horse-related. I've been pretty lucky about that. I did one stint with SkillPath Seminars where it was public speaking, and I did that, and I taught about a nonverbal communication and composure, credibility, and confidence was the talk that I did for a lot of women that did not have those things. That was kind of a fun talk to do. But other than that, it's been all horse-related. So when I came out to... I started at Cal State Fullerton and got my PR and marketing degree. And then I ended up at the University of Colorado at Boulder to get my journalism degree. And I really thought I'm going to be an anchor woman. And I lasted as a reporter for about, I don't know, 6 months. So I guess that was non-horse related too. But it was very negative, Glenn.
It leads, it bleeds.
It wasn't for me. I want to be around happy people.
Oh, you're one of the most positive people I've ever met.
Thank you.
I can't see you working in a newsroom.
Yeah. And I didn't love the news enough.
Soul out of you.
Oh, without a doubt. And if it was negative, it bumped the happy story. So I had a happy story bumped one day and I said, I'm done. The happy story is bumped. And now I've got to go back to this poor family and tell them that they're not going to be on the show. Mm-hmm. And I'm done. So I quit. But I always had riding lessons in my hip pocket. I taught at High Prairie Farms in Parker, Colorado. I taught their up downs, I call it, all their beginner jumping stuff. I went in and I met a man named Jim Moore. He was one of the head trainers there at the time. And I said, all right, I go, I want to teach your beginner lessons in exchange for you teaching me because I'm a college student and I have no money. And he's just looking at me and he's like, well, pay for a riding lesson and we'll see if you're any good. So I got a bunch of money together. I paid for a riding lesson. He put me on Gunsmoke. I'll never forget. Another Appaloosa. They tend to follow me around. And I hopped on Gunsmoke and I jumped my little course. And about jump 8, I had to stop. And he goes, it's a 12 fence course. What are you doing? I go, I cannot breathe. I've only been here a week. And it's 5,800 feet and I come from sea level. I cannot breathe. Gasping for air. But I guess he liked me enough that he did hire me to teach there. And in exchange for teaching his up downs on Saturday mornings every week, I got to ride his Grand Prix schoolmaster, not only in dressage. So I learned how to do tempi changes every stride and all kinds of fancy stuff. I also got to ride his Grand Prix jumper. And pretty soon I was doing jumpers at 4 foot. It was awesome. So I was very lucky.
You really have had more than most people, I would say, you've had the varied background from the English and Western. You've done both.
Well, and what I tell everyone is never say no. If somebody says, hey, you want to hop on this reining horse, don't be all, oh, I only ride English. Don't do it. Jump on the darn reining horse. And if somebody says, oh, you want to ride this Paso? Yes, you want to ride the Paso. You want to experience every single breed and every single discipline because, oh my goodness, it'll make you humble, it'll make you appreciative, and it'll make you love our industry.
So what was the job you would never do again?
That's funny. I worked for a startup company in our industry. It was one of these... It's gone. And it was a startup where you do kind of like an Equisearch.com, but not them because they're good, right? Yeah. But like one like that, where I was selling ads and trying to get people to put their horses for sale on this thing. And it was owned by a dad and his son, and it was just not good. And the guy was always breathing down my neck. And I'm not a hardcore salesperson. I don't mind doing sales, but I'm much more of a marketer and let's bring the group together and a public speaker and an educator. And that was just hard to just be true sales 100% of the time. I did not like that job.
So you ended up, you were director of the Arabians, right? Association? Was that something that was it Arabian Association? Is that
it was.
That right?
Yeah. It was. So it was such a cool master's degree because I had to do 4 internships. I had to intern at a TV station, which was WB Channel 2, where I ended up working for 6 months. Then I had to intern at a newspaper, which was the Daily Camera up in Boulder. And then I had to intern at a radio station. Yeah, Daily Camera it was called. And then I had to intern at
a... That was still around, by the way.
It is still around, actually. Local Boulder paper. Yeah, it is. Okay. And then I had to intern at a radio station, and I did one for a local NPR kind of station. And then I had to intern at a magazine, and it was the International Arabian Horse Association magazine. And so when the job at the TV station, I quit them because I couldn't do the negativity anymore. I called up the editor of that magazine and I said, do you guys have anything open? And she goes, not with the magazine, but we have our youth coordinator position. You're going to be in charge of all the youth activities that go on at all of our horse shows. So I got hired by them to do their judging competition, to do their Hippology and Horse Bowl competitions, to do all of those kinds of things, their Youth of the Year program. And I loved it. It was really cool. And that's what kind of got me into the association side. And I enjoyed it very much. And I went to all their national shows and helped them put those on and did my part of the job while I was at those shows. And I did that for almost 5 years, 4.5 years I worked for them. Well, then I had a stint at the Urban Farm in Denver, Colorado, that works with at-risk youth, where I was their development director for a year and wrote all their grants to get all of their funding. And then Julie Goodnight at the time, for many of you know her, she was our program director and she was also a certifier for us and still is. And she was doing a certification clinic and I had met her on the American Youth Horse Council board that I was a board member for because of Arabians. And she had said, you need to get certified. The Urban Farm could have their insurance decreased. So I asked the Urban Farm if they wanted to do that. So they sent their instructors to get certified by Julie and another certifier named Jennifer up in Steamboat Springs, Colorado at the Home Ranch, which is an amazing 5-star guest ranch for anybody that wants to go. Wow, what a place to get certified. And I got certified through CHA because of that. And so when my job was ending, because the grant ran out at the Urban Farm, Julie said, hey, we're looking for a part-time marketing director. I know you've done a lot of marketing. Do you want to do it? So I became CHA's marketing director. So it's been a lot of networking and a lot of not ever saying no to opportunities that sound cool, even though they sometimes scare me. Things now that are a little scary, Glenn, when you first get asked.
And when you first contacted me, I think you, I don't know, we were talking, it's been so long, I don't even remember, but you had said you'd been in radio before and you liked it. That was one of the things
I did enjoy that. I enjoyed that stint in journalism and doing all those different internships for a whole semester for each one was eye-opening. Of what you like and don't like. I didn't like writing for the paper. Yeah. That was not for me. But boy, I enjoyed the magazine work and the radio work and quite frankly, the TV work until I was actually in it full time and then I didn't like it.
Yeah.
Got it.
Well, it's funny too because I am not a writer, as everybody knows. And when I get asked to write things for the various podcasting things, it kills me to do it. It is so difficult, yet I can get on here and talk, or I can go as an interview on another podcast, which I do all the time, talking about podcasting. I can do that all day long, but boy, writing it down is so difficult for me.
Do you know what I think, Glenn? I think writers and speakers use different sides of our brain, because I feel the same way. Just like I feel like a horse trainer and an instructor are normally, you're not great at both. You're normally better at one or the other, because again, different sides of your brain.
I agree.
Different things.
I agree totally. And I tell people I'm not a writer, so what you get is not going to be good.
Yeah.
Do what you want with it. It's not going to be great. But if you want me to do an interview, audio or video interview, I'll be there.
Oh, and spontaneous, just whatever. Yeah. Like I had to do, like what? I'll tell you what TV taught me. Christy, you need to do this in 54 seconds because the commercial's coming on afterwards and it goes 1:06. Yes. And I have 54 seconds in my brain. Like I could right now talk for 54 seconds and not even look at the clock.
Can you imagine how bad I'd have been at regular radio? The commercials would have always been late. There
would have been
so
great.
Bad. That's why I do podcasting. We set our own time.
That would be that straight A student part of me, the 54 seconds,
yeah,
Glenn.
Exactly. Exactly. The non-straight A student part of me. So that's it for today. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you, Christy, for giving us a little background.
Super fun. Anytime.
I know that I knew I could get some good stories out of you. The night story is a classic. That's just a classic. Is there pictures of that, by the way, the prom?
There is. There is, but they're not on social media. It didn't exist back then. So they're just my pictures.
Okay. Let's see. And I was going to say we can make that the show notes picture for today's show, but I don't think we're getting that, people. I don't think.
Oh boy, I don't know about that. I think you're going to get a cute picture of Kara with her horse instead.
All right, be that way. So where can they find the CHA again and all the things that are coming up? Because we're getting into season.
Yes, please. We are. Go to CHA.horse. And there's so many certifications up there right now, ladies and gentlemen, that want to go get certified or audit, either our equine facility manager one or our English Western instructor one. There's so many coming up all around the country. You can certainly go there on our homepage, sign up for our monthly e-newsletter. We won't bombard you more than once a month. And then all the clinics will be there too, so you can see where they are. Obviously, there's lots of discounts for anybody that says that you're with Horse Radio Network. We always give a discount because we love all of you. And so please do go there. And then if you're looking for an instructor or wanting to find a facility near you, it's chainstructors.com.
Very good. Thank you, Christy, for joining us today. Of course, you can find all of the past episodes of the CHA that we do the third Tuesday of every month. You can just go to horsesinthemorning.com, scroll down to the middle of the page. You'll see the CHA logo. Click on that, and it brings up all the past episodes. Thanks, Christy, for joining us. We really appreciate it. We'll be back tomorrow. Jamie will be here. Get your ads in. Remember the over $500 in prizes we have, compliments of horselovers.com. We'll be giving away this month, but you need to get your ads in to qualify and get put on the list. For really bad ads on Friday, send them to jennifer@horseradionetwork.com. And if you want to become an auditor and join the cool kids of the class, you can go to horseradionetwork.com and scroll down. You'll see the auditor banner is for as little as $3 a month. You too can become an auditor and join the auditor room. Christy's in there. She sees all the stuff that happens in there. It's a busy place.
And it's fun.
That's it. Thanks, everybody.
Bye.